Hello, listeners. You are listening to another episode of That's Entertainment. I am your pop culture maven, Jeff Malone, and with me usually, live from Hampton, Maine, is my Aunt Beth Woods, but actually we've got two guest hosts, and they're two returning guests, and you may be able to figure out why. Perhaps you read the topic, you looked at the name of the episode, but anyway, live from Export, Pennsylvania, and from Yardley, Pennsylvania, it's returning champions Jeff Smith and Bob Malone. How's everyone doing today?
Very good. Welcome. Welcome from Yardley, PA.
It's good to be back, Jeff, for another year.
Yes. We're recapping another edition of March Madness. Now, do you remember, Jeff, did I do the intro to the tune of Round Ball Rock last year? I know I did it.
I think that was the plan, yeah.
I know I did it at least once. I think I did it when we did the original March Madness episode, and did I keep up the tradition since then?
As far as I remember, yeah. Why are you thinking
you're
mixing
well,
it up?
Okay, well, I agree with you. I'm pretty sure I did as well, but I kind of rethought it because, well, Round Ball Rock has never been March Madness music. It was originally NBA music, although now it's college basketball music because it's on Fox Sports' college basketball coverage. But I don't know, should I? Well, NBC is going to be, they're getting NBA rights back. Is that next season or the season after?
It's next season, yeah.
Yeah, so are they going to be getting the rights to Round Ball Rock back?
Everything I've seen, yeah, that's the case. They're going right back to like whenever they lost the rights back in the early 2000s, and it's just going to pick right back up where it left off from everything I've read.
Well, in that case, I should be doing the intro to the tune of, I should do like, da 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 da, and then I should come up with a One Shining Moment parody to close out the show.
Well, you're going to do that, highlights of this broadcast?
We can do highlights of, what could it be? Highlights of every March Madness podcast episode, yeah. Or just everything recorded in March. March and early April.
One of my favorite podcasts to listen to, especially during college basketball, it's called the CBS Sports Eye on College Basketball podcast. And they'll put out podcasts three times a week just to kind of go over the latest big stories in college basketball, and they'll pick the biggest games and things like that. But every year, once the calendar flips to March, they make it a big late 90s March Madness theme. And the whole month until the tournament ends, they'll begin their podcast by playing that. And it's usually the first episode, once it turns to March, is usually they put some sort of just segue of old clips and things like that to kind of get the juices flowing again for March Madness. So could follow their lead, I think, Jeff. That'd be a good idea.
It is one of their most popular things about their podcast, and so many of their listeners always comment and look forward to it and say that they should have that as their intro theme for the entire year, not just March.
The March Madness theme music?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe just for the sports-themed episodes of That's Entertainment, we can do it for.
There we go.
Yeah. Well, anyway, on That's Entertainment, usually the hook of the show is we pick a pop culture topic and discuss it according to the three Fs, first, favorite, and forever. We already did that with March Madness a few years ago when Jeff and I covered our lifelong love of the annual college basketball tournament. And then we've made it a tradition since the years since just to do a recap every April, because March Madness lasts into April. But since we've got a returning guest to That's Entertainment, but first time to a March Madness episode, it's going to be more than just a recap episode, because Dad, Jeff, and I already talked about our early and favorite March Madness memories. But before we get into this year's edition, we'll have to have you toss up a few jump shots in the form of revealing your earliest and favorite of all time March Madness memories.
Okay, well, if you humor me, I have several memories. And obviously, I do go way back. So some of these are viewing and some are in person. And obviously, there are March Madness was way different way back. So when the tournament was first broadcast, I don't remember much more than the championship games. But I do vaguely remember UCLA winning in 64 and 65. And those were Gail Goodrich and Hazard, I think, on those teams. These were pre Lou Alcindor and Walton on the teams. These were guard-oriented teams. So I vaguely remember those.
Kareem wasn't there all 8 years that they were in the row, or however many it was.
No, and he was Lou Alcindor at the time. And then I remember a little more distinctly it was 1966, and the team was Texas Western, which then became UTEP. But at the time, they were Texas Western. They played Kentucky. And it was the first all-black starting five. And again, I'm 12, 13 years old, and it's like, oh, okay. You know, I didn't really realize the significance of this. They were going against Kentucky, who was a perennial power, and Adolph Rupp, who would not, even look at would not recruit a black player. And so I was rooting for them, because this was, I think Don Haskins was the coach, and maybe Willie Cager was a guy on the team.
Who played Don Haskins in the movie?
Yeah, the year I was just. I was going to say, I remember that there was a movie made about it years after. I don't remember who it was, but
do you know? Have you seen Glory Road?
No, I haven't seen it. I've heard of it. I never have gotten the chance to watch it.
You a hint. It's an actor who shares his name with a baseball player. Who played he only played a few years. He played from 2017 to 2019.
Oh, He would have been did he look like him? He was kind of short and round. Did he look like
actor?
The coach was, I believe.
The actor who played him is from Arkansas. He has kind of a round face, but no, I guess the actor they got was a more in shape guy.
Oh, that's how I remember him. Maybe that's years later.
JL are the actor's initials.
Ooh.
And the baseball player he shares his name with was a pitcher who pitched with the Cardinals, the A's, and the Orioles. Apparently he just lasted 3 seasons.
Uh-huh.
Oh.
First name. Second letter of first name is O. Second letter of last name is U.
John.
No. There is an H somewhere in there.
I don't know. I think you're going to have to flip.
Last name is similar to a biblical writer's name.
Oh, jeez.
Luke?
What's a longer version of that?
Lucas. John Lucas. Jerry. John.
Four letter name starts J-O. There is an H, but it's not John.
Josh Lucas.
Correct.
I don't remember. Okay. But all right. Well, we'll get. So, I watched the game, but I didn't quite get the significance of it. So those are my earliest viewing memories. In person, I went to, in the late 70s and early 80s, I went to Providence and Hartford to see, with my father, to see Rutgers when they were making getting in the NCAA. And then I also went to several regionals with work colleagues when the games were held in either Philly or Newark. And I attempted to get into the Final Four when it was held at the Spectrum in 1976, when the year that Rutgers made it to the Final Four. My friend Doug and I camped out at the Rutgers barn to see if we could get tickets, but they had a very small allotment for students, and we did not make it there. But my most memorable attendance record or remembrance is that I saw the Duke-Kentucky game at the Spectrum, March 28th, 1992, where Christian Laettner made the last-second shot to beat Kentucky 104-103, which is considered probably one of the greatest basketball games, one of the greatest NCAA games. You probably
where was I at this game?
Yeah, well, I didn't. You were a few years old.
You could have said I was there, but I just don't, I was too young to remember it.
No, yeah, this was I went with work colleagues. This is one of our trips. And probably about 100,000 people will tell you that they went to this game. But I checked it. The actual attendance was 17,848. And I definitely was there. And that's the game. I think it was Grant Hill made that basically full inbound pass, almost the length of the court, passed it to Laettner, turned around, and made the shot. And that's one of the great, you know, the great memories of it, and one of the great games, one of the great NCAA games. I guess it was I think it was a regional game.
Yeah, I think it was the regional final. I think it was one versus two.
Yeah. So those are my early memories of March Madness.
Well, do you remember the first year you filled out a bracket?
We did that, and I actually ran a bunch of them at work. So probably in the early 80s, we probably did it. And what I would
was that before they expanded to 64?
Oh, yeah, yeah. What happened is we would do it, and I would have probably 40, 50 people from work would be involved. And after each round, I would manually score everything. And it was kind of fun, but it was very time consuming. And it was also, it took a lot of time at work. Oh, then we'd go in and how's everybody doing? And I'm sure that's still takes time at people's work, but ours was not so fast where you could look it up and say, oh yeah, the people have a chance. We'd then say, oh yeah, who's got this team and this team? And we took a lot of time on that.
In that era, there was probably a lot of offices where people would be like, are you sure you added it correctly? But at your office, you know, the state auditor's office, they kind of, I guess they figured everyone was qualified to
do that. Well, yes, correctly. we would get audited, yes, but I mean by our fellow employees, yeah.
Okay, so any other previous year's memories to share before we dig into this year's, Dad?
I cannot even tell you the year, but there's always so many buzzer beaters. I just remember one year it was like it went from buzzer beater to buzzer beater. One year, Rolando Blackman, I think Kansas State, was one of them. But I think they went from one game to the next to the next, and it was like boom, boom, boom. They all it was like three or four in a row. It seemed like I think on the Thursday afternoon. And that year just seemed to be a bunch in a row. Every year there's buzzer beaters, but that particular year, I didn't even look it up when that was. That was probably, I don't know, 30 years ago or whatever. I know.
Was it 81 possibly? I just Googled Orlando Blackman buzzer
beater. Yeah, I guess it could have been. I know that was a long time. Usually a Thursday afternoon or Thursday or Friday, I would take off from work. Sometimes we'd go to a local pizza place, or sometimes I'd just come home and watch the games.
Okay. Well, there were There was at least one buzzer beating shot in this year's tournament. It seemed like less than usual.
Yeah, I think so. Was that the Maryland, the Queen?
Yeah, that's the one I'm thinking of, Derek Queen. But anyway, so overall this year, the men's winner was one seed Florida. All four one seeds made it to the Final Four in the men's final. Over in the women's Final Four, it was three one seeds and one two seed, and that two seed won it all, although they were playing more like a one seed the way they beat the one seeds that they played. In fact, they beat three one seeds in a row, and I think beat them all by... double digits. Mm-hmm. That was UConn, perennial champion in the women's game. But this was their first championship since, was it 2016 or 2017?
I think 2016. I think so. Yeah.
So like an entire generation has gone through grade school. Like, Jeff, this is the first time your kids have seen UConn women win it all. They think of the UConn men as more...
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. More perennial champions than the women.
I saw the fact that this was what Gino Auriemma's title. Now he's won in four different decades now as UConn head coach.
Oh, huh?
Holy cow! And they showed pictures of, like, him winning back in the mid '90s, and yeah, I mean, just to think, like, wow, time flies.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, so what was? What did we say? 2016 was the last UConn championship. And that was the year I moved to Brooklyn, which to me, that feels like recent. Like anything that's happened since I moved feels, you know, not that long ago to me. But geez, it's been nearly a decade. So, but anyway, yeah. So, Dad, Jeff, overall reactions to this year's men's and women's tournaments. Jeff, I'll let you go first since, Dad, we heard we'll give you a break from speaking for the moment.
I feel like on the whole, we were treated to a lot of really good matchups where, you know, if you're a college basketball fan and you're watching like during the regular season and you see a weekend where some of these teams are matched up, you're just thinking, wow, this is a good slate of games where – I do feel like there was a lot of people miffed over the fact that there weren't those Cinderella teams getting far into the tournament, but I feel like the pure basketball fans, like I'm going to throw myself into that side of it as well too, is like I thought the matchups were phenomenal and
you
got a lot of good there as the end got closer and closer, where some years you have those teams that with the higher number next to them where, you know, they'd run out of steam when you get to that point. You think about like some of those teams, like the George Masons and the VCUs, they gave it their all to get there. And then it just turned into a blowout. But this year we didn't have that. And I mean, we still had enough drama. I feel, I mean, everybody thought Duke, Auburn, two best teams, and you saw what happened to them too. So no, I think on a whole, it was a very, very good end to the tournament. I mean, I know that people weren't happy about just the lack of upsets, more chalk. And then, you know, you get some people talking about how is this a product of the transfer portal and NIL? Is this going to become the new norm? Well, who knows? We don't know that yet. We don't have enough data points and enough years to really know if that is truly the tipping point now in that direction where we're going to have more of these bigger schools in or not. So it's just like, we'll see. Just appreciate what this year was. And I don't know. I think that the stat was this was the first time since 2008 that all the one seeds made it to the Final Four. Well, that was 16 years or no, gosh, 17 years ago at this point. So I feel like, you know, we'll get a little bit more of Cinderella back in it next year too. It's just a 1 year thing.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, it was mostly the higher seeds dominating or winning. I would say they weren't dominating, at least not necessarily. Like there were a lot of close matchups that could have ended up as upsets, you know, compared to the women's tournament where that was even chalkier, I think. And there were, I think the highest seed that won in the women's first round was a 10 seed. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure no 11s or 12s won. But yeah, so like they were, even though there weren't a ton of Cinderellas, they weren't they still played well. So I'd be surprised if we have a very similar tournament next year, but it all depends on how that goes. Dad, what did you think?
Well, first off, I want to say, I think Jeff Smith is very intelligent, because I was going to say almost the exact same thing yes, there were very few upsets overall. And again, you hadn't had those four number ones in such a long time. And my comment on that was, I like the top teams to compete. I'm not a big fan of the underdog, where so many people say, oh, I love the underdog. But there is a trade-off. I think the tournament does lose something when you don't have a Cinderella. But in this tournament, in the Elite Eight, in the Final Four, you definitely had the best teams, you know. And in the past, like Jeff said, you would have a George Mason, you'd have a Richmond, or, well, I don't know how far they got, but you had even NC State, I guess, last year. Did they make it to the Final Four?
Yeah.
Those teams get on a run, but then when they get into the Final Four, it's like, you know, those games aren't always competitive. This year, you know, you had the best teams there. And so that, I agree with that. And then my other thought was, is this a trend due to NIL, due to the transfer for portal, or is it an anomaly? And it's too early to tell. We don't know. It might be because the big schools have the money, but there are the basketball only schools, which also have a lot. They're going to have the revenue share money. St. John's has, and other Big East schools have a lot of money that they don't have to worry about football. Creighton doesn't have to worry about football. Providence doesn't have to worry about football. So
so many mid-majors don't have to.
Yeah. So they, they can probably compete. So I don't think we have to worry about that. And I used to say, Jeff, especially when I talked to your mother, there were always fewer upsets in women's basketball, because there's a bigger gap between the haves and have-nots. And there'd be the occasional upset. But and so maybe men's basketball is moving in that direction, but we don't know. And so in women's basketball, you really had – I really thought this was UConn's year, but you had that there was little gap between Duke, South Carolina, Texas, UConn. I mean, those USC, UCLA, and who knows what USC would have done without Juju getting hurt. I think they probably would have been the next strongest team there. So you might be having, that one level of those really top teams there. So you are going to have some really strong and good competition at that top level.
Yeah. Well, one other thing one other reason I think for so many fewer upsets in the women's game historically and also this year is because very few women players graduate early.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how old they have to be drafted in the WNBA? Is it?
I don't know that anybody does. Anybody go early? I don't know.
I think you can leave. I want to say you can leave after your junior year, but let me look up quick. Let's see. Looks like you have to be at least 22.
Oh.
Wow. Yeah, so I guess if you turned 22 during your junior year, and it's 22 for American players, 20 for international players.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I guess if you turn 22 during your junior year,
Paige Buckers was probably old enough because she had redshirted.
Right.
She had an injury.
I think this was her fifth year.
Yeah.
So she's 23. So mm-hmm. yeah, she was definitely eligible. Some of them can maybe leave after junior year, but they're pretty much all staying 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
And even if they could leave early, the financial incentive isn't as big,
right,
because WNBA rookie contracts are nothing compared to NBA rookie contracts.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay. Any other elements of this year's tournaments that we want to talk about? Maybe the announcers, how they did, or any commercials that got played over and over. I was definitely satisfied with this year's number one in-game broadcasting crew for the men, which was Ian Eagle, Bill Raftery, and Grant Hill. Now, was this the first year without Jim Nance, or had he hung it up last year?
I think it was 2 years ago. I think this was the second year it was that Ian Eagle-led team.
Okay, yeah. Well, I mean, he and Bill have had, they're doing it together like they've been doing it for however long he and Jim Nance were doing it together. They had chemistry right from the get-go. And yeah, I mean, I could watch the game without the picture. I could just listen to them describe the game and, you know, close my eyes and just get my fill of the action from their calls.
Go ahead.
I like Ian a lot, and I was glad they were the number one team. I was not crazy about some of the other teams. Kevin Harlan, to me, should be doing car racing or horse racing. That's how he calls the game. It's like, and Cooper Flagg is coming up on the left, and Con Knipple is coming up in the middle. And, you know, everything is so fast. And I think Stan Van Gundy is insightful, but his voice is annoying to me. And who else? Brian Anderson and Jim Jackson they're pretty good. I think Jackson is good, but I'm also not a fan of Steve Lapis. To me, he's Steve Yappas. He just doesn't stop talking. And I thought the women's main team, I said, oh, they didn't bother me, so they're not annoying. That's Ryan Rucco and Rebecca Lobo. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. I said, oh, she's was there a Connecticut bias? It's hard. There's so many, a lot of people from UConn, but hey, like you said, they haven't been winning for all those years. So I thought they were pretty good. But yeah, there were a couple of the men's teams that did bother me. So when it came to the final and it was the Ian team, I was pleased with that.
I think I pretty much just tune out everyone that isn't Ian and Bill and Grant.
I mean, I'm impressed with Bill Raftery's schedule. I mean, to be between Fox, what he does with Big East coverage, and then carried over to CBS as the one team. And he's in his early 80s, too, just to have that fastball constantly. It doesn't matter what game he goes to. It's just so impressive just to, like, keep that going.
Yeah, and Jeff, when I was a college student at Rutgers, he was coaching Seton Hall. So we're talking about over 50 years ago, and not that he was just, and so he was a coach there. So he was in his 30s. Yeah. So he's still going strong. Yeah. And Vital was a coach there too. So that's, you know, I saw those guys that long ago, you know, there's that continuity.
There was one call. I think it was a second round game. I forget who it was, but it was, this crew that we're talking about, and someone made a three-pointer, and I think Bill said, what can you do in that situation? Or maybe Ian said, what can you do in that situation? And the other one said, well, you can take the points. And then was it Bill who says, well, what if you're on defense? Oh, well, in that case, there's nothing you can do. It was a lot funnier when they said it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they have good chemistry in there. Yeah, they make it more, even more enjoyable. Jeff, yeah, there were a couple other things. I thought, you know, we're talking about NIL, but it made me think there's different ways to construct a team in this current environment. You look at Duke, they still do it by the relying on freshmen and the pretty much one and done. Their team was the super fresh. They start three freshmen. Now, again, it's not just any freshman, but there were three freshmen, and then they sprinkle in transfers. I said, oh, do they have any transfers? They had about three transfers, but they're not. They're just role players. They're not even all starters. They had Mason Gillis. I said, oh, I remembered him coming over from Purdue. He's like their eighth man. And then James was a starter. And I think they had one other transfer who's not a starter. And then they had Proctor, who was a top 100, probably a five-star when he came as a freshman. He's in his third year. He could have gone in the draft last year, but he thought he could he should wait another year. But again, primarily freshmen. Auburn is almost all transfers, but they're like mid-major transfers, and they just hit the jackpot with them. Broome was not from a big school, and so there are other guys. And then you look at somebody like, and this is just an example, a cross-section, Michigan State is still mostly homegrown and mostly seasoned players, fourth and fifth year guys. I guess Jace Richardson was a freshman, but still, they're guys that have been there a long time. And then, you know, a team like St. John's, some of the others, they're the transfers and they are fourth and fifth year players. But they're all successful models, but all different ways to build a team. So it's very interesting. It's not just like, oh, it's NIL, just bring in a guy, fourth year, senior, you know.
Well, I think it was one other thing we saw this year is that, I mean, however you do it, you do need a good coach. Like some of the best coaches had, some of the best coach, current active coaches of all time had some pretty great seasons this year. I mean, Tom Izzo, how many times has Michigan State made the Elite Eight? How many times has he gone to the Sweet 16 or farther? Then you had, well, you know, Bill Self lost his first game, but he lost it to Calipari at Arkansas. And then Calipari lost, he won his next game against Patino. So all these, prime time coaching matchups. It makes a huge difference in college basketball.
You have to be able to, I guess you have to be more like an NBA coach. You have to be able to put a team together each year, a new team. Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's become more of a growing role, too, where a lot of these programs have what they call a general manager, even, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like somebody who will do that job and then leave the coaching to the coaches, where it's just like, yeah, I get it. You are trying to run yourself like an NBA team.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, and some of these guys do have – some of these coaches do have NBA experience. Mm-hmm. They didn't necessarily have great track records there, but I don't, maybe that helped them when the college game started becoming more like the NBA game. The discussion of transfers made me remember a player who did transfer. I wish that Louisville had gone a little further, because then we would have been able to see Chucky Hepburn's fans. Did you guys notice in the crowd?
No, did they wear their hair like him?
They had a prop.
Uh-huh.
What kind of prop would you have if your favorite player is named Chucky?
Oh, they had the doll?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought they would have had the hair, a different hair color. He has like
I think they might have had the Chucky doll with styled in his hair.
Oh. Okay, I'm going to ask you guys what your favorite game was. I think I know my son's favorite game, but I'm not sure. One particular game?
Of this year's tournament
or
of all time?
This year.
This year? Well, let me look over them quickly. Well, I okay. Let me just give me a second.
You did react to it, Jeff. So I thought, or memorable game.
Oh, did I text you after one game?
They didn't. This team didn't continue. It was like their. It was the apotheosis of their style.
Oh, okay. I think I know. Yeah, I didn't. I do know what game you're talking about, but you know, I'll have. Yeah, I did like that game, and I also liked another game, but for different reasons.
Okay.
Were you going to guess what our
favorite? Yeah, no, I wanted to know, but I thought you might say this one. Tell me.
Yeah, I think the one you're talking about is when Arkansas beat, Alabama beat, who did they, was it, against BYU Sweet 16, and they broke the three-point shooting record.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, well, I also found that game interesting. I don't know, Dad, how you felt about this, but that was a matchup of two Rutgers
transfers.
On BYU and Cliff Amorei on Alabama. And they did, and the announcers mentioned it, mainly because they were fighting for a jump ball at one point.
If Cliff had stayed at Rutgers, I think that was the one missing piece that they needed. They would have had some they could have played defense this year. But you looked at Alabama and you say, how could they lose? But obviously you don't shoot threes like that every game. But they couldn't miss. I mean, they were like 25 for 50.
I saw some comments on, like, I was just looking through social media just to see what people's reactions were. And I think I saw some people like, oh, I don't like that style of game, just tossing it up whenever you come down the floor. And I'm like, that's not how they were playing. Like, these were fast break threes in rhythm, passing it around, guys getting open, jump step backs. They were like swishing.
Yeah. They weren't sucking. They were in rhythm and
I did enjoy that game a lot. And then the other game I liked was the championship was just a very exciting, closely fought finish with a kind of a bizarre defensive stop at the end.
Yeah.
But also I liked that final because, you know, in our family Sweet 16 pool, I ended up winning.
You had to win by 2 points, and that's what you win by.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah.
Jeff, have I told you about our family's Sweet 16 thing?
No. Mm-mm.
So going into the Sweet 16, there's 16 of us in the family, or some people are coupled up this year. But we're each randomly selected one of the remaining teams.
Okay.
But the trick of it is your team has to cover the spread.
Ah, okay.
So if you are the underdog in a matchup, you can steal the other team if the favorite doesn't cover. So I started off with Arkansas, who lost to Texas Tech, but Texas Tech didn't cover. So I stole Texas Tech, and they lost to Florida, but Florida didn't cover. So then I had Florida for the rest of it, and they were favored against Auburn and slightly favored against Houston, and they beat the spreads then.
Yeah. So it's a very fair thing because it doesn't matter who you get in that 16 as long as you cover the odds.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's neat.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's also for people whose brackets have been busted at the Sweet 16. It's like, oh, geez, I'm already out of it. So here you have another chance. And the other comment I wanted to make was once we got to the Elite Eight, maybe the Final Four, I thought that the games were exciting. Some of them were very good, but I wouldn't call them classics like the Duke Florida or the Florida Houston, because I thought the teams were so athletic and they kind of brought each other down to the extent that there wasn't good shooting. And it's not because of, it's because they were so good, and that the, so that wasn't really a good shooting percentage. And there were, you know, so it wasn't like a classic game, but it was, if you want to call it, you know, the cliche kind of a rock fight or whatever. But there were, it was very high on the excitement level, and you had a lot of great comebacks, and you had, who was it? Florida against Auburn, and then Houston coming back against Duke, and then Florida coming back against Houston. Some really great comebacks. Mm-hmm. Again, Jeff, to mention your mother, I often say to her, "Oh, I'm going to call this game. You know, it's 10 points with a minute and a half to go, or whenever." She said, "Are you ready to call?" In these games, I was not ready to call. Mm-hmm. Duke's got a 9 or 10 point lead.
Yeah.
No, I didn't call them. I didn't call them ahead of time because Florida can score 9 points in a minute, and yeah. And they've done that. And
I would not have bet on Houston's comeback because they did not seem to me like a team built to come back.
Yeah.
The double digit lead. They're more of a grind you down defensive mm-hmm. specialist team, but they push comes to shove. I guess they can score when they need to.
Yeah, I just think you had some very athletic teams, and they were able, you know, they're just going right at it, blocking each other, and really, you know, even when Duke played Alabama, they knew what they had done, and then they came out, and that's really good coaching. You know, you have just a few days, or just sometimes there were just 2 days or a day to adjust, but even just a few days, and they could adjust to these teams, and they just went right at each other. And really took away what they could do. And then Houston says, "Oh, Walter Clayton, and I'm really impressed with him." And they took him out of his game. You know, so there were no, very few easy shots. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't as pure a game. Or, you know, you didn't have really clean offense, but that's because the teams were just so athletic and so good defensively.
Jeff, did you say did you pick a favorite game?
No, I was about ready to jump in and say it, but it's right along with what you guys are. But it was that Texas Tech Florida Elite Eight game where it was the same idea where I had Florida going to the championship and losing to Duke. And I'll be honest, I thought I was going to lose them in the second round against Connecticut. I sweated that one out thinking, oh, this is, you know, it's just UConn and Hurley again.
Yeah, yeah.
That they're in trouble, and they willed it out, and then their next game against Maryland wasn't much, but then I thought, oh, well, here we go again. I'm gonna lose them again, and just that furious comeback where it's thinking, all right, maybe there's a little bit more here than what you say, but it's true. It's just the athletes on both sides just watching is just incredible, where you just thought, all right, Texas Tech has this, and it is. It's just like just the way Florida was able to just take it to them at the end. It was like, wow.
Yeah. Florida is certainly deserving because they came up with it, you know, when it was, you know, they never folded, and when they needed them, and they could just score boom, boom, boom like that.
Well, Jeff, it sounds like your bracket did better than mine if you had Florida and Duke in the final. Who else was in your final four?
I tell you what, this has to be the first time ever. I had the exact Elite Eight.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I thought that's where I gained a ton of ground on everybody, and just even like my picks in the Sweet 16 mostly hit too. Where I picked Texas Tech over St. John's, I picked BYU over Wisconsin, and I was getting a little bit earlier. Like along the way, I was like, okay, this isn't too bad. And then you know you sit down with your bracket and start thinking, okay, I got 3 ones in the final four and a 2. Yeah, right, but. It seemed to go pretty well for me. I mean, my 2 was Michigan State over Auburn because there was a lot of questions about Auburn the way they went down the stretch. And, I mean, Auburn was a veteran team too, so they could put it together too there. And, I mean, they played very well and were deserving as well. But it's not like that was a blowout either. So where I thought, okay, I mean, just like a lot of these other games, Michigan State could have easily come back in the second half and they just had one more mm-hmm. push on there too. And mm-hmm. I would have been sitting real pretty.
Yeah. I had a very different fate with my bracket. I mean, I guess I had to come back down to earth after I won last year. It was like the complete opposite for me compared to last year. Like last year, I think I was 8-8 after the first day near the bottom of the pools I was in. Then ended up winning it all because I had the right final matchup and three of the right final four. This year, I was 14-2 after the first day in the lead, but then I only had one final four team correct. I might have had at least half of the. Let's see, 1, 2, 3. I think I might have actually had six of the Elite Eight correct.
Did you pick more upsets, Jeff, or was it just not getting the names right between the top teams?
I didn't pick a ton of upsets, but the upsets that I think I really only had one upset, or I had two early upsets that worked out. I picked McNeese State over who'd they beat? Clemson.
Clemson.
Yeah, and Drake. Drake won, right?
Uh huh.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And actually, I might have had Drake winning two games, but they won one. But yeah. Then I went the one place where I went a little crazy was I picked Gonzaga to the final four. Then I had St. John's losing in the final to Alabama. So St. John's losing hurt me. So the only final four team I got correct was Auburn, and I almost didn't pick them. The only reason I did was like, well, I need at least one seed in the final. I kind of wanted to pick Michigan State, but I was like, well, has it happened? I think it's happened once that there was 0-1 seeds in the final four. Can't pick that, but
yeah.
I mean, this year I was like, I thought the one seeds were very strong, but I also thought the two seeds were very strong. So, but yeah, clearly the one seeds were stronger.
And that's one of my favorite upsets. Anything else left? I try to pick in that second round a 7 or a 10 over a 2 because more years than not it happens, and I just couldn't convince myself to take any of them, and I'm glad I didn't because I don't even know where I was closest even thinking about that because I did. I thought there was like a top tier of teams where I was like, okay, I think they're okay to at least advance them two lines and then look once they get into the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I mean, well, this year was interesting because I thought the one seeds and two seeds were as strong as they've ever been. But I also thought there were a lot of interesting higher seeds. Like, you know, Kansas was a 7. UConn was an 8. Gonzaga was an 8. Who else? Like, these are teams that have been Final Four teams.
Yeah,
right.
And, you know, they have the talent. They're not that far removed. They have the same great coaches. They're not that far removed from their best years. And one of them, Arkansas, you know, with Calipari coaching, pulled off a big upset. But for the most part, some of them were competitive. UConn was very close. Gonzaga had a late run against Houston. Mm-hmm. A few different bounces. Things could have gone differently.
Yeah. I just want to say about brackets, I don't do them anymore, and I feel good that I don't. I know enough about college basketball to know that I don't know enough about the teams, and it's easier. I don't agonize over it when I watch, and then I can root for somebody if I like, oh, I really want them to win, and now I can root for it. Where before, if I was watching, it's like, oh, I wanted them to win, but I didn't pick them, and so it just makes it easier. And the one other thing I wanted to mention was, Jeff and I sometimes will talk about, oh, is this team going to get in? And I don't like it when a major conference team is even being considered or gets in that has 14 losses, 13, 14, 15 losses. And I think there was only one, maybe there was one team with 14 or 15.
I think Texas.
Was it Texas?
Yeah, they were like 19 and 15 or something like that.
So I don't like that. I don't like it when a team has a sub-500 record in their conference. You've already lost to more of the teams in your conference. You know, maybe your RPI is better than all these other minor conference teams. Give them a chance. Okay, the way things are going, you're probably not going to win, but that the 10th place team in the Big Ten or the SEC, even though they had so many teams, is probably not going to win, so they don't deserve it. That's my feeling. But I also thought it was funny when they talked to the chair of the selection committee, and they said, was it Bubba or whatever? They said, you're from North Carolina, and North Carolina got in. Well, I leave the room when they discuss North Carolina. And I'm like, yeah, they're discussing North Carolina, and then you come back in. Bubba, we picked your team. Oh, okay, thanks a lot. You know, like it's still purely impartial. You know, you can still say you're doing things by the computer rankings, but which rankings are you using? And, I just think there's still too much of a bias towards the major teams. When you're getting those, and then North Carolina didn't embarrass themselves anyway. They didn't, I guess they won. Did they win their play-in? Did they win the next game?
They won.
Yeah.
So they didn't embarrass themselves. But at that point, I'd rather have a few more of the lower conference teams. That's just a chance for them to shine. And when you're talking about, and some people were saying, oh, it shouldn't have been North Carolina. It should have been West Virginia. I don't know that they were more deserving or, you know.
Yeah. To me, I was like, instead of Texas, I was actually more fine with North Carolina than I was with Texas. Although, I mean, with just looking at the resume, their Bubba being in there makes it questionable, but I would have preferred Boise State or UC Irvine.
Yeah. Just give those teams a chance because they haven't played the quad ones or whatever. Yeah. Sometimes because the teams won't play them anyway. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Texas has had 20 chances to play, all the major conference teams, and they didn't do it too well. So,
How about, and maybe either one of you would know better, because I didn't follow women's college basketball to the same as the men, but once I saw the women's bracket released, and I could never imagine this happening on the men's side, 3 Ivy League teams on the women's side. You had a Harvard and then 2 Princeton and Columbia in play-in games. It's like, there is no way a small conference like that would get 3 in the men's tournament. Yeah. It's just like, what in the world?
Did
Ivy ever have 2 in, Jeff? Did they get 2?
In the men's?
Yeah.
Not that I recall.
Oh, okay. Because sometimes Penn and Princeton were both really good.
Mm-hmm. It would be like they'd both have to have perfect non-conference records and then only lose to each other in their conference play for that to happen. And they would have to have like at least one signature non-conference
win. Yeah, and they rarely play in a big preseason tournament.
Yeah, but I mean, I do watch a decent number of women's games during the regular season, but it's not Ivy League games. I don't know. You would probably need ESPN Plus to even see those games. Like I watched South Carolina, UConn, UCLA. Like I saw the top teams, so I knew they were getting in. But yeah, I was like, okay. Apparently, I don't know. Maybe those Ivy League teams did have a decent non-conference schedule. I guess they must have.
Yeah. Well, they certainly have some good players because some of them have gone on. They transfer. You know, Danny Wolf and some others have, transferred to major teams and done well.
All right. Do we have anything else to dive
into? Oh, one last thing. I checked, I don't know when you get the final things, but I checked viewership. The women's final or final four was way down. And that's definitely the Caitlin Clark effect.
Yeah.
Because it was, you would think, oh, UConn, South Carolina. I think it was down like 60% from last year. And the men's was the highest in 8 years. I wasn't sure it was going to be. And that might have been the final, that might have been before the Monday game. But so I'm not sure if it's overall, if that was just the final four, the Saturday, or if it included Monday's game. So that was a good sign for the men in college basketball. And I don't know that it's bad for women if that was – I think overall they were doing pretty well, but it was just the final just couldn't – you know, it just couldn't match what – I think last year the women's final actually outdid the men.
Yeah, it did.
Is that – yeah.
Yeah.
Anything else to you want to say, Jeff, before we wrap it up?
Yeah, you know what? I'm gonna spend like 30 seconds here to show a little bit of love for the school closest to me that made the tournament. Did you hear this whole story about St. Francis over the last couple weeks?
I don't think so.
So how about after their play-in loss to Alabama State, the president of their school been voted, I guess, behind the scenes with chancellors. They're dropping down to D3 in a couple years.
Oh.
So they're in the process of transitioning all their programs to that level over the next few years. They're still D1 for the next year, but their coach, who went to St. Francis and has coached there for like 20 some years, he just retired, and a lot of the players are transferring out. But you just had a team that it was a surprising run. They won the NEC championship, but you just had this school who made it, who's going to be playing the likes of like Grove City and colleges like that around Pennsylvania in a few years here too. And I got the chance to go up to St. Francis. I think it was, gosh, at this point, it was a little over 5 years ago. They made it to the NEC finals and they played Fairleigh Dickinson, and their gym is no bigger than a high school gym where you still had custodians coming out with like the big push brooms, like to clean the floor. And there's just a humongous crucifix behind the one basket. It does not strike college basketball at all. And you felt bad because that year they were the top seed and they didn't make it with the home court advantage and everything, because the NEC is so small, you just play in the home gym throughout your conference tournament. And then the following year in 2020, they made it back to the NEC final and they played Robert Morris, who's right on the other side of Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
So I took the trip out for that one too. And Robert Morris beat them, but that was the COVID year. So like Robert Morris won the NEC and then tournament shut down a couple days later. And then just thinking there's no shot St. Francis was going to win this one. And just the story over those few days after they clinched, like they were everywhere. They were under 500. They were just like the big story. They called it themselves Nowhereville, Pennsylvania. And just that story that came out, just that they're just kind of cutting, and that the president made the point about just the transition and what just funding and spending is like for small schools like that, where it makes you wonder, are more schools going to take that route as well if they're not making money either? But it's kind of a sad story, but it's kind of like a good for them to make it. But it's just a shame that there's not going to be, I can't see much in the future, the next couple of years here, they ever get back to that point, because all the players who are on that team are transferring out of there too.
Is that Loretto? Is that where they are? Loretto, PA?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was, I think, wasn't there one school that made it this year after it was maybe just their first or second year in D1 for kind of an up?
Oh, yeah, somebody had moved up. Was it High Point? Or, I don't know.
I think it was High Point's first time making it. Was UC San Diego was the one.
Oh,
right? Yeah.
That, well, they went through that transition period, and now they're good, they're in, so...
Yeah, and they played Michigan pretty close. I think I had that upset. I wanted to mention the CBS late night show After Midnight. Last week they had their After Midnight Mania special of weekly for the whole week. They called it After Midnight. Or After Midnight Madness, was that what they called it? But anyway, it was like their own tournament of improvised comedy, which included some pre-recorded bits from the CBS sports team. So they had what's his name, Adam Corse, is that his name, who's the studio guy? They had him, Wally Zerbiak,
Adam Zucker,
yeah, and what's the woman's name, at Jay Wright, and who's the one woman in the studio? Well, anyway, and
is
then
it,
they
is
also
it Candace Parker?
No, it wasn't. I think Candace is part of the studio team, but it was someone else. And then they had a message from, so they had, and they had Ian and Bill and Grant. So they were like, they were doing their basketball style analysis, but of the comedians. So if that sounds interesting to anyone, there should be clips on YouTube, and full episodes should still be up on Paramount Plus. If you're like me and you love college basketball and comedy, but anyway, okay. So yeah, that's another perfectly successful edition of March Madness and another perfectly successful That's entertainment episode talking about it. So, anything else before we say goodnight?
Any
predictions for next year's tournaments?
Hard to know what teams are going to look like.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess the one thing you have to start planning for, too, is you have first and second round games in Philadelphia next year. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, they were according.
It seems like there's always some close to me. I mean, because you can have some in Philly. There's some in Newark some year. There's some. They sometimes have them in Brooklyn at the Barclays. So, yeah, I think I've gone in person once, maybe like 15-ish, or maybe more like 20 years ago, when they were in Philly one year. But yeah, if I wanted to go to games, I probably wouldn't have to go too far. Okay, Dad, let Uncle Marty and Uncle Paul and that crew know if they
want
to plan a trip to some games. All right, so you can follow us on social media. We're still on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and now we're on Blue Sky. You can support us on Patreon if you'd like. I will say what is good night since Aunt Beth is not here at the moment. And I'll let my guests, Dad and Jeff, thank you for joining once again. I'll let you guys sign off quickly.
All right. Well, it was a pleasure. Good night.
Yeah, Jeff, we'll do it again same time next year.
Okay. All right. I'm looking forward to it. And in the meantime, keep your remotes handy and your basketballs handy and your eyes open.